pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jada Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, I'm drinking my cider out of a glorious metal cup. Are you?
No, I'm drinking beer out of a glorious metal cup with a clear plastic bottom. I mean, it's just how we roll.
That's how winners roll, my friend.
That is how winners roll.
Absolutely. So, yes, Nathan and I swapped positions this time and out of the basement, which I got best general this time, and Nathan got best painted.
Yep, which is exactly the full swap of last year's out of the basement January tournament.
And in both cases, Terry's fault.
Yes.
The display board she made you that year. And then this time, all of the donations, all the toothpaste and deodorant purchased for the charity drive.
Yes, because you and Scott were tied for overall points, so they went to food bank donations as a tiebreaker, and my wife fucking coupon clipping like mad and gaming their point system, which got you, Maddie, and I into a three-way tie for the largest donations overall for the weekend.
That's correct.
Was the decider to get you the overall tournament.
That was the top honors. Yes. Oh, that and me rolling 6-6s in a row on the last turn to destroy a battleship.
Oh, to turn that loss into a draw.
Glorious, glorious draw. which was between Scotty and I, by the way, because we both got landslides in our other two games. And then we played each other in the second round, and I was able to pull out the draw. that Omnidyne Dreadnought, holy shit. So you are listening to Jada Gamercast. We are going to be talking a little bit about what we did this week in hobby, kind of as the main topic for today's show. So let's dive straight into the weekly listener poll, Nathan. The question that we asked you guys was, what aspects of a model ruin it for you? And with 38% of the vote, because this vote was spread all over the place, it is disproportion. Apparently, that is the thing that will kill anybody's enjoyment or thumbs up like of a model if we're on Facebook, which we are.
Right. Which I found interesting that disproportion.
Oh, that was not a surprise to me.
Well, but again, I guess that the people voting for it must be talking about like over the top disproportion, because you do know that every single Model Games Workshop has ever sculpted in their history has been disproportionate. Like that is heroic scale is a disproportionate model, and that's why I think they're talking about just like, listen, I'm okay with his bolter being the size of his torso and his sword being as tall as him head to foot. That's fine, but if he had like weird long gorilla arms, gross.
Well, okay, like, there's a certain cartoony scale that I think is generally accepted. We don't need things to be 100% realistic, but yeah, when a guy's fist is twice the size of his head, or his feet are enormous frickin' clown feet, you know, it's hard to really get behind a model and enjoy it, but other aspects of that are kind of emphasized with that cartoonish scale, like, for instance, Space Marine armor. Makes no goddamn sense in terms of, like, how a Space Marine would actually be able to move the way that they move wearing armor like that, considering that the leg joints can only go forward and backwards and not side to side.
Well, yes, for sure, but even beyond that, let's talk about Space Marine shoulder pads and how each one is larger than his chest plate. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, it's just like, you're totally right. And maybe that's what it is, where people are just like, I'm okay with a little bit of bullshit with the scale.
Well,
but like I said, you give Superman. Me clown feet, no sale.
It's the Superman theory, right? I totally accept that Superman can lift up a skyscraper and that he can fly literally with just thinking about it. But if in a movie he kisses somebody and makes them forget everything that happened the last 3 months, that's bullshit. Right? That's all it is. It's the Superman theory. It's like, how much are you willing to accept before it just goes completely off the rails? However, bringing up a very close second with 22% of the vote is sexuality. That's no surprise. That was the one that you and I voted for.
Yeah.
Ian had commented on the poll, and he said, three words for you, Kingdom Death pinups. Ugh. And that is the absolute truth of it. That is the one that absolutely destroys it for me. I mean, sexuality done right is so rare, I can't even come up with really good examples of it. Nine times out of a hundred thousand, it's done right, and every other time it's just like, nipple, just one though. And you're like, okay, sure,
that's
I guess.
That's for you, Games Workshop.
That needs to be there.
You know, or even like the Kingdom Death nursemaid, where they're just like, what is it? It's a fat person with tits everywhere, because gamers like tits, right? 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 Tits, well, guys, get it?
Everybody you're likes like, tits, come on.
Fucking God, Kingdom
That's
Death.
That's like, everyone likes it. It's universal.
Listen, everyone does like tits on people. Well, no okay, one fair. Wants to purchase a model and just be like, I'm going to spend so much time highlighting these tits.
No, just
it's just so supple and, oh, God, yes. You're gonna
sponge texture the areolas. So, yeah, I think that's the one that absolutely ruins models for me, because it just doesn't belong, especially in the theme of what a lot of tabletop war game models reside in. Mm-hmm. It's just completely unnecessary. Like I said, I've said it before. If they took all of the witches or, you know, Cultists of Cain or something like that and just put them in the white robes spattered with blood or something, I'd be perfectly fine for it. But no, they all got to be wearing metal G-strings, and they all got to be wearing Princess Leia outfits, and it absolutely grinds against me. Not in a good way, not the stripper way.
Right.
It just does everything wrong, and it absolutely kills me. So coming in third here is quote-unquote concept. For instance, the Baby Bjorn. Or the Space Marine Snuggy Centurions,
Listen, the explosion. You want to stay warm.
That's right, the Carnifex, right? Like all those things, they just as a concept they don't work, and that will absolutely kill a model for you, just right there. So coming in at last, there we got pose, clutter, and gear. Only one person voted for gear, where the actual gear that the model is holding is what kills a model for them. If they're just like Stormbolter, fuck off.
What, you mean like when if you were one of the people building a sister's army back with a 10-man metal box set, it's just like, what do you mean you only give me a storm bolter? No flamer or melts a gun, you piece of shit.
Right, exactly. So yeah, we did have some comments here. Adam said, big head cheat was only amusing for about 8 seconds in Turok. 8 years on, the shelf is a bit much. Also, the outlaw miniature from episode 209, Cad Bane. He's talking about the guy with the one we really liked.
Oh yeah.
With like the glass, the Mysterio bubble
base
plate. And it does kind of remind me of Cad Bane, which is pretty rad. He was from the Clone Wars cartoon.
Oh, okay, cool.
He's like the best villain out of the Clone Wars. He was awesome. He was a Duros, by the way. Kevin said, what ruins a model is such a hard thing to pin down. For example, Centurions are bad on several levels. Concept, we put a dude in a suit inside a suit so he can suit up after suiting up. I felt stupid.
I'm the dude.
That's right.
Dressed as the dude playing another dude.
Hey, bro. It felt stupid when it was the Baby Bjorn, but at least Grey Knights had a legit reason for needing something like that. Ellipses, comma, comma. maybe. Space Marines have several iterations of heavy armor, from Terminators to Dreadnoughts. Then it fails even harder by being clunky and misproportioned. I think the Dreadnought's actually a good comment, because there's the Forgot About Draenaught, the one that people were posting in the Facebook group, the new Forge World one.
Oh, yeah, the one that I just had to sigh and shake my head, because, like, there were rumors in Forge World.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, man, we're cooking up a new Dreadnought. And I was just like, oh, my God, the Contemptor's so amazing. Oh, I can't wait to see it.
The Derridorio.
And then they're just like, look, baby, it's Dolly Parton with shoulder guns. And I was like, this is fucking dumb.
Yep.
Oh, I hate it.
Oh, it's awful. It's just, it doesn't, it's, I think Maddie actually made a comment that was really good. One of the things that he has said is he hates the idea of, like, the little helmeted head sticking out of the huge armored body, and that the sarcophagus look was always the best. And the fact that they always kind of keep moving away from just that cool Space Marine sarcophagus to, dude, this is just a guy's head. It's so stupid looking.
What, and you this mean, thing, like, that Space Wolf one where it's literally a bear head?
Yes. Oh, yeah. That. Right
you
up there
the
with
skull?
It.
Skull? Armor value 12, bitches. And you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. Are you kidding me?
So, I mean, this one especially is one of those things that just completely fails. And it the concept doesn't work. The pose, I definitely can see the pose killing models. But I think for most people, pose is something we kind of, it annoys us, but we're willing to accept generally, as long as we need that model in our army. We'll either chop it up or we'll, you know, pull the rock out, or we'll have it do something else with it, just that the pose doesn't bug you quite as much. But
yeah, because I mean, like, I can convert a Lore Master of Hoeth to not look retarded, and
exactly.
We're happy.
Right, exactly. So, hey, there you go. Thanks to everyone who voted on the weekly listener poll. You can find those at jadagamercast.com. We will have another question for you at the end of the show, of course, if you remember. So let's talk Model of the Week, Nathan.
All right. Necrons. Model of the Week. Let's talk about unnecessary releases. It seems to be Games Workshop's go-to.
Yes.
When they're like, hey, everybody, guess what? Brand new codex means we're going to give you another model that you don't need because you already got like two or three of them and it's cool, but whatever. Buy our shit. Necron Overlord. Yay. You know, honestly, I think of all of the unnecessary characters, I think I like this one the most. I know the Dark Eldar Archon was crap.
Total crap.
Oh, I hated it. The Skaven Greyseer was, again, kind of who cares. This isn't a terrible model, but then again, how hard is it to do Necrons kind of quasi-right? I mean...
Well, I think this is Necron's first foray into Captain Morgan.
Well, oh yes, this is absolutely Necron's first foray into Captain Morgan, and it doesn't even surprise me that they're doing it. We talked about it last time we did Games Workshop Model of the Week, where it's just like, is it possible for anyone in the 41st millennium, or even the fantasy end times? Like, again, we don't discriminate. We're Games Workshop. Mm-hmm. We are an equal opportunist, rock-standing company.
That's right.
You know, but it's just like, God, you know, yes, this is Necron's first Captain Morgan, so good for them.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, you got a decent lord up until the head. I don't know what's going on there.
The crest on the head is pretty unnecessary. I think generally, I do really like the look of this model. I love the cape, even though it's not a cape. It's just kind of an apron sitting out. What do they call that? Where it's just, it goes down.
Apron?
Let's say half skirt.
Sure.
He's got that cool half skirt going on. The side is pretty cool
within
looking.
Minutes of this being posted, someone's just gonna be like, "It's called this, idiots," and that's just our fans.
By all means, they gave him the right war gear, which is great. Resorb. I like pretty much everything about the model. Like the head crest, I could take it or leave it.
Well, and that's the thing is like even when you look at the head and you're looking at a 360, you could very easily clip the crest if you dislike it, in which case you just have your traditional Necron head.
Well, and it's a ball socket for the head as a separate piece, so you could put any Necron skull on
it. Yeah, well, and that's exactly it. It's like, you know, sure, he's Captain Morganing, it's unnecessary. The pose is fairly static. I mean, I think we've seen more motion in models before, because I mean, like, really, he's just holding up the resorb. He's got the scythe, which looks pretty cool. For me, I think the detail that I love the most is like that chest and back piece. It looks thick, it looks bulky, you know, and it fits. I think that I would keep the dick tabard off, but that's
you mean the dick laser?
Well, no, dude, you need a dick laser. I'm talking about the tabard hanging off the laser, okay?
Just gonna lose the dick tabard?
Well, yeah.
It is a really super unnecessary dick tabard, considering how long it is. I would probably keep it. I would just maybe clip it shorter.
But or maybe
the big gem on his dick is the thing that is so...
I was gonna say, he might need it, though, because...
placed. Like, you have to think, is this how Necrons, now that they've got this whole...
They procreate.
Yeah, you know, big holographic dick. Big gauze dick. You always impregnate on a six.
You impregnate twice on a six.
That's right, man. That's how you play. It's not Tesla. That's not a Tesla dick. That's a gauze dick. Gauzecock. I play bass for Gauzecock. So, like I said, I like the scythe. I think the whole model in general is pretty good altogether. There's a couple of things I would clip just to kind of maybe just lessen the silliness of certain
like
parts.
I said,
but for
me,
generally, I like it. It reminds me of the old original Necron lord with the full on like metal cape,
who was also like holding the resorb in that pose.
Yes.
Like it is almost like an homage. And again, I'm right there with you. Like I think I would clip the head and smooth it out to be a more traditional Necron head. I'd leave the tabard off and I would do nothing else. Like this isn't committing sins, and thank God for that, because, you know, he doesn't have, like, resorbs on his belt along with books and fucking Imperial Guardsmen that he collects because they're kooky and zany now. You know, so like I said, it's just, like, they didn't overdo it with anything, because, I mean, like, even if you look at this and compare it to, like, the Greyseer that we saw last week, he's got, like, the one Necron symbol on his chest, which is a super common motif in the army. That's it.
Oh, no, so he also has one on the back of his hand, both hands, and he also has one on each of his, the inside of his arm guards.
Of course he does.
Yes, because you have to make sure you're Necron. You can't just not have those things.
Well, you know, God forbid someone be able to use this bit and
hurt
something. But anyway, like I said, genuinely happy. I don't think there's really much to talk about it. It's a Necron. Have you seen one? You've seen him then.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, generally, I quite like the model. I think it actually looks quite cool. It's a good little release, but like you said, wholly unnecessary. And much like the Necron release, which we will be talking about, I suspect it will also be wholly unnecessary.
Well, so, you know, the fact that that could have been used to describe most 40K releases of late kind of blows. But yeah, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
We will definitely give it a read through. I mean, that's our thing.
Yes. So generally falls off, but hey, there we go. We'll wait. We'll hold our judgment. Probably not. We'll hold our judgment until we actually see the Necron Codex. But hey, till then, whatever. Just enjoy your not buying this model because you don't need it. All right. So let's get on to the main topic of today's show. We're going to be talking a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. And by a little bit, we're going to be breaking down the Firestorm tournament that we took part in and kind of some of the do's and don'ts with regards to Firestorm, considering that this is kind of a little lead-up, little road to Adepticon conversation here, because this very much was our testing ground for our Adepticon lists. I came away feeling very good about the list that I had built. I think mm-hmm. you were waffling back and forth on whether or not you would still take the list that you had built, and part of that is what we'll be talking about, too. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's get a breakdown here. I took Omnidyne. This tournament was 900 points, meaning that it is a battle fleet. We are able to take dreadnoughts, and we have all the compulsories for a battle fleet, which is one whole extra tier 3 unit on top of what you would normally take in a patrol fleet. So yes. Really, you're required to take another 75 to 90 point unit.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean,
like, what you would typically normally be taking that anyways.
And that's exactly it. It's like, realistically, let's talk about 900 points as a point limit. Because you have battle fleet compulsories, mm-hmm. the only difference between it and 800 points is the composition. Mm-hmm. Because that extra 100 points is going to the 100 points of frigates you need for the additional compulsory. So you don't even get to use it. It's just an issue of, at 900 points, heavy cruisers are tier 2 instead of tier 1. Mm-hmm. You can take a dreadnought, you can take a second battleship, and battle cruisers can be taken in squads of 2 instead of a squad of 1. And that's about it. Like, that is realistically the only difference between playing a 900-point tournament versus an 800-point tournament. You know, and honestly, I think I would prefer 800 points.
Yeah, I absolutely would. I wasn't very happy with 900 points. Not because the games were less fun necessarily. It turned everybody's list into the, how do I cheese the points with the composition, right? And, I did exactly that by taking an Omnidyne Dreadnought, which is virtually unkillable at 900 points. In every single game that I played, the most anybody did to it was 3 points of damage, and that was, like, in the end of the game when they had nothing else to shoot at. 3 shields, tough as hell, lots of hull points, and because I'm playing Marauders, I've got the bug-out card, so even if it gets close to dying, I'm just like, I shunt out this turn. You have to do 7 points of damage this turn, or you get nothing.
Yeah.
And so I never have to worry about that point swing, because it's never going to happen for me. Whereas other armies, like, let's say, Cerulean's, or who else would I lump into that one there? Probably just Cerulean's and some of the other more, like, off-the-wall type lists where you would say, oh, I don't really want to take a Dreadnought. It's not a great choice.
Yeah.
You're almost always going to want to put a Dreadnought in your list because the firepower, it turns out, is huge. And the fact that it's so hard to kill is exemplified by the fact that most people are just not going to have enough on the table. Because of that, it pretty much means everybody has to take a dreadnought just to deal with the other person's dreadnought.
Yeah, and that was kind of what I had found, because I mean, like, you were the only person with a dreadnought there. But I mean, so many lists were basically the same thing. I mean, in my mm-hmm. 3 games, I mean, my Terran list was a battleship, a carrier with cruiser accompaniments, shield cruisers in my case.
Mm-hmm.
Squad of destroyers as my tier 2 compulsory, 2 squads of missionary frigates as my tier 3 compulsories. That was it at 900 points. My first game was against a Ryushi fleet that took a battle carrier, a squad of cruisers, and 2 squads of frigates. So it mm-hmm. was basically a mirror match.
Yep.
My second game was a mirror match where he was playing Terrans with the same battleship, the same carrier, you know, and you're just like, fuck.
Yeah, the only difference was he had taken cruisers where you had taken destroyers.
Yes.
And that was it.
That was literally the only difference. You know, so it's just like, everyone kind of ended up building the same styles of lists, because we all just focused on, man, if I can get those two tier ones. But in reality, I should have just taken a Dreadnought. I don't think that if I had had a Terran Dreadnought out with my three escorts, which is something I've played at 1,200 points and have, you know, have never seen it be destroyed at that points level, it would have been untouchable. It literally would, like, nothing at 900 points could have ever thrown out enough firepower.
Again, unless they took Dreadnought.
You know, but again, my Dreadnought...
It would still be hard.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Terran Dreadnought is designed to eat firepower from the other Dreadnoughts and live. Like, that's the point. So it's just like, yeah, I was just looking at it. I was like, yeah, if I was going to take Terrans at 900 points, and I wrote out some lists today, and I was just like, here's a Terran list that has a Dreadnought. And it was just like, Dreadnought with escorts... I think I took defense platforms because it was 90 points and let me have scout to redeploy my Dreadnought.
Yeah.
And 16 missionary frigates. And I was just like, there.
Yeah.
This is literally the best fleet 900 points can take. Right. It's an asshole fleet. It's a straight up dick fleet.
Well, and it's not unbeatable. Don't get us wrong here. We're not talking that, oh, if you take a Dreadnought, you'll never lose a game. No, you'll lose games. It's going to happen. Even the games that I played against Scott. Scott had the list tailored to beat me. He was playing Ceruleans with a shit ton of his Tier 3. Pack Hunters, Scatter, it meant all my elusive Corvettes were shit. And he basically just rolled over my whole fleet. However, because he didn't have enough to kill my Dreadnought, I was able to, through a hand of God, pull out a draw. Now, I mean, dice being what they were, he was rolling hot, it was going back and forth. Sure, that's Firestorm. We're used to that.
Yes.
We know that, yeah, okay, if you go up against a Ceruleian player, and he wipes out all of your Tier 3 with his scatter, and you're depending on just your defense platforms and your Dreadnought, you will not be able to
accrue
enough points, right?
Defense platforms also rely on difficult target to live. Yeah. So
and they're Tier 2, so again, it's the same thing.
The scatter's going to wipe him out with that swing. No, but I mean, like, you know, at least if we were talking Adepticon, I basically have my For Anyone But Ceruleian, and then my Ceruleian list, which is pretty much nothing but nuclear torpedoes.
Right.
Not even kidding. I'm just like, no! I've got 12 pilgrims lobbing torpedoes.
Yeah.
I've got a carrier I took the two battle cruisers with nuclear torps and torpedo spook. I took three cruisers with nuclear torpedoes. I'm just like, deploy full stop, lob torpedoes. Hope for the best.
Yeah. For me, for Omnidyne, there's really no reason to take any other version of my list. I've got my two compulsory Tier 3, I've got my compulsory Tier 2, and then a battleship and a dreadnought. I had toyed with the idea of painting up one more gunship, taking a squad of three gunships and then essentially downgrading the dreadnought to a battleship. But why? A battleship is so much better than one more dreadnought. The dreadnought is so much better than one more gunship.
Yes.
Leaps and bounds, considering my gunships are total garbage.
But I mean, like, in pretty much all lists, because I mean, like, you know, if you go through everyone that was there. I mean, obviously, Scott playing Ceruleans is not going, yeah, man, I want that 400-point Ceruleian Dreadnought. Sign me up. He's very happy with it because Ceruleans win games off of their frigates. Mm-hmm. That is how Ceruleans work. It works for them. He's not changing his list realistically. You're looking at it saying, of course I'm going to keep my Dreadnought. I'm looking at it saying, God, I wish I had a Dreadnought all day. You know, I wish I just had the extra bit of firepower put out, and the, like, mountains more survivability. Because in two of my three games, my battleship went from not damaged to two or fewer hull points remaining in a single one of my opponent's activations. And I was just like, oh, Jesus Christ. Like, you don't even have the opportunity to shunt it out. Because it takes so much damage so quickly, and you're just like, well, shit. I guess I'm going to play Temporary Solution. Hope I win that initiative roll and I get to light something up before he blows it up. And, like, that's all you can do. That's all you can hope for.
Well, in battleships generally, even when you look at their stats, they're only a little bit tougher than what you would see for a heavy cruiser. So even if I were to play, say, for instance, my Directorate at 900 points, the list that I had built was actually taking the battle station as my tier one, keeping it cloaked the entire game so that it never died, just launching wings and essentially just shooting its random cyber shitty little guns. Shit. Nah, fuck cyber warfare. Don't buy that upgrade. But basically,
because if Lang can be trusted to do anything, it's roll ones on that roll.
Eight
and I get
in a row
it
on my cyber warfare. But then, but again,
I get it because even my things. Even my boarding shuttles, like they would go, they would win the combat, they would do that point of damage, and then it's like on that D3, boom, hazard marker, hazard marker. And even the one time I got a crit, and you know, forgot to roll on the crit effects table because when do I do boarding actions?
Right.
Still rolled up the dice and rolled a one. So I'm like, yeah, now I know why Lang hates this. And it, cause again, you look at it, you're like, man, you look at that top end. There is so much potential. And then just the reality that this dice roll will fuck you. It's just, your dice hate you. This is the time they're going to just fuck you. And you have to deal with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I was saying with regards to like 900 points is that I would then desperately try to get like two squads of heavy cruisers into my directorate list. So it'd be like a battle station, two squads of heavy cruisers, and then like whatever my minimums for tier three are. Because those two squads of heavy cruisers are essentially like two dreadnoughts. They got a ton of firepower. They can board mm-hmm. like crazy. They can, they've got cloak. They're super tough. They've got 15 hit points between all three of them. Actually, I think those are six. So actually, they've got even more than that. Yeah. So yeah, it's absolutely one of those things that, you know, you become very stuck in this idea of, well, okay, my list isn't a balanced list built to kind of deal with all comers and, you know, I'm going to take a little bit of this here and a little bit of this here. It's like, no, I got to get that one thing in there. And yep. I got to get as much of that one thing in there because I just will not be effective in any other way. If you're playing Aquins, it's like, yeah, you take a dreadnought and yep. then you take, you know, your heavy cruiser squad and then you take your minimums for tier.
And that's it. Well, and I think that's also why I prefer patrol fleet. I mean, if you're going to play at a points level like this, like, don't get me wrong, I love battle fleets, and I will choose to play a battle fleet game over a patrol fleet game if given the choice and given the opportunity. Mm-hmm. But I think that when we're talking 900 points, there's no reason to ever play that points level. Drop it down to 800 points because it brings a lot more equity back into the game in terms mm-hmm. of fleet construction. No one's fleet is really, well, actually people's fleets will actually start being drastically different instead mm-hmm. of all being built to that mirror match. Because again, with heavy cruisers getting slotted up to tier one, dreadnoughts off the table, mm-hmm. 0-1 limit on battleships. So it's just like, you look at all of these things and you're just like, yeah, you know what? You go with 800 point patrol fleets, lists are going to be all over the place. Because if you were playing your directorate, I know for a fact you would probably take your squad of three heavy cruisers as your tier one.
Yep, without a doubt. And that my 800-point directorate fleet is actually really, really strong. I've yet to lose an 800-point game with it, specifically because of the fact that I have a very strong option when taking my heavy cruisers as my tier one. One of the other things to remember is at 800 points, it also stops people from taking multiple battleships. If we're playing that battle fleet level, I can take up to two. So again, I can still spam the things that I feel are going to do the best for me.
Yeah.
You know, if I was playing Dendrenzi, that's absolutely what I would do. I'd take two battleships, put them on the table, and go ham for it. Maybe not necessarily the dreadnought, but either way, like both are going to be as effective because it's a shit ton of halt points, it's a shit ton of firepower, and they're generally hard to kill. I mean, in the game you had against Maddie, that thing was just trudging along, you know, mopping them.
In fairness, the battleship was the only part of Maddie's fleet that he played correctly because that he deployed it far back. He moved minimum shot, moved minimum shot, moved minimum shot. So with all of his cruisers that he just like drives to max to the middle of the board, which let me get beside them, which thank you to every Dendrenzi player in the world, drives to the middle and lets their opponent get beside them. Thank you. You, sir, are a gentleman.
Oh, my God. I remember going over and sitting down. I was like, why is your stuff in the middle of the board? He's like, I have to get in. I was like, oh, God damn it. But, you know.
Like, he was just like, I was trying to play the scenario. It's just like, but we both get 2 points, which cancels out the advantage.
Yeah.
And you know it's going to take me at least 3 turns to get to yours.
Go get him with your small shit. But yeah, so I agree. I think we're both in agreement here. Everyone I talk to is in agreement. We would rather see 800 points as opposed to 900 points. It's just the game is designed kind of within that realm. Yeah, it can absolutely do 800 or 900 points, but the big question becomes why. The game is best at 800 or 1200. It, you know, whether it's 900 or 1000 or somewhere in the middle, there's always a reason why you're just sitting there going like, okay, well, if I do this, then I'm stuck. You either you need to have the freedom to do what you want to do to make your list fun to play or worthwhile to play, or you need to play with the restrictions according to those smaller sized games.
Well, and that's exactly it. It's like last year's Out of the Basement, being the first second edition tournament, ran 1,000 points, and we as the community were just like, yeah, I mean, it was okay, but our lists were essentially all compulsories plus one option. Unless I took a maxed out Dread, in which case it was just all compulsories, full stop.
Yep.
And we even said, like, let's play 1,200 points. You know, and I know that we played 900 points due to a combination of tournament timelines as well as practice for Adepticon. But yeah, I mean, like, if, you know, for next year, if they say, hey guys, we only have 2.5 hours per round again, I think we're all in agreement that 800 points is where we would rather be playing games.
Oh, absolutely. You know, even at 1,200 points, a Dreadnought is a big investment. And you'll see a lot of people stray away from it. Like, I still don't use a Dreadnought at 1,200 points in my Directorate.
Because your Dreadnought is not amazing.
And in my Dendrenzi, I use a Dreadnought at 1,200 points because I'm specifically building for Tier 2. And while I understand the urge to let people play with the models that they have, like, maybe there's people out there who all they have is the Dreadnought, and it's like, well, if you don't, you know, let me play with the Dreadnought, I can't play. You know, this game is cheap enough that go get yourself a carrier, get yourself the brand new battle stations, get yourself a battleship, you know. It's not an expensive game. It's not cost prohibitive like other games are. I don't think, I mean, again, I'm assuming that might have been a deciding factor in this, but I really hope that that wasn't necessarily the thing that threw it over to, like, okay, let's pay 900.
Well, I mean, before this tournament, before we had the chance to actually play it, I remember thinking that 900 points was actually really, like, a really neat way to get around tournament time limits. Because of basically all the reasons we're saying it's not good was the reasons why it kind of ends up being good, in that by forcing along battle fleet minimums but also allowing things like dreadnoughts, it gives you basically a fuckload of firepower in a patrol fleet.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's really all 900 points is it's a glorified patrol fleet that allows you to have dreadnoughts, which means dreadnought firepower. And so I was just like, no, that's really good because you're not going to have games called for time. But again, after playing it, I was just like, man, I would so much rather play patrol fleet because, again, three games, I basically played the same fleet twice.
Yeah.
And it was my fleet. Mm-hmm. So it's just like basically three people at that tournament were playing almost identical fleets to each other by virtue of, like, we looked at 900 points, we're just like, yeah, this is the way to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
and I do take it back. I can't play two heavy cruiser squadrons at 900. I can only take one.
But even still.
That's just, I'm going to correct it before people correct me. So, let's talk about fleets.
Okay.
It's very clear if you've played in a Firestorm Armada tournament that certain fleets tend to do better, and it's not necessarily because they are hands down better. One of the big issues with Firestorm Armada, as we've talked about, is the time that it takes to play. And there are certain fleets that don't play fast. They're not built for firepower. They're not built for those opening three turns. They're built for the last couple of turns. Terrans, Aquans, those are the guys that are going to really excel in the later turns. And even like Rolthosa are the exact same thing. They are not churning out a shit ton of firepower in the first two or three turns.
Nope.
And even in the later turns, they don't. They're trying to outlast their opponent until they have a clear advantage, at which point they decloak and they start doing work.
Yeah.
And if you can't get to that point, you're always going to pull a draw. Which I'll let you talk about because you are the draw master.
Holy shit. Well, and I mean, like, that's the thing is, like, okay, so with this tournament here, three games, I had two minor losses, both of which were 5 points on the battle log, which is literally 1 point outside of a draw.
Yep.
And then the third one was a 7 point, advantage win for me, which was down from like 13 because I failed to repair the corrosive marker on my admiral's battleship. So that was a huge fucking swing in the last turn's end phase. But basically the problem is when you play a marathon fleet, and really that's what those three are, Aquins, yep. Terrans, Relthosa, they're the marathon runners fleet, and they're totally balanced. I mean, we have played enough games that we know that any fleet against any fleet, at least the six core, because it's not like we've played every Alliance and Xenian fleet, but it's just like, out of the six core fleets, everything is pretty well balanced against each other, and there's no one fleet that is a clear winner. But when you go to a tournament, you're running into a number of factors. The number one factor is the time limit. You are only going to have X number of time per game. Let's go 2.5 hours because it's a super common time limit.
Right.
Because I think in the last three tournaments, my Terrans are 3 wins and 6 losses, and about 4 of those 6 losses were clear wins had the game not been called for time in the middle, like in turn 3, where it's just like, you know, I have the advantage, my ships have moved into the right positions, he wasn't able to finish me off, I'm chipping him away, now he can't really hurt my ships because his firepower is reduced, and it's just like, and time, look at the battle log. And you're just like, fuck. You know, but it's just like, you're playing against the clock, and when you have 2.5 hours, deployment is going to take about 20 minutes. So it's just like, just reading the scenario special rules, which is a big downside to custom scenarios at tournaments,
yeah.
Especially in a game like Firestorm Armada. Because if you said rulebook scenarios, read up, you're going to play missions numbers 1, 2, and 4 in that order, I can be prepped for it. I've played it 100 times. I get to my table, I can introduce myself to my opponent, we can start rolling dice and deploying. We know what's happening. Custom scenarios, now I've got to read what's going on, what's the primary, what's the secondary, what's the tertiary. We have to set it up, especially if you have to put things like debris clouds
stations. Even if I take the time to read the scenarios and know them, like, for instance, Josh released the Adepticon scenario.
Those are primer scenarios. Those are scenarios that are going to be similar to the ones being played, not the actual scenarios.
Even if I take the time and read those and learn those, I have no guarantee that my opponent has. And it only takes one side of the table to slow things down to the point where we're a half hour into our time limit and we're just now deploying because, you know, he's not sure what's going on. Now, hey, I get it. In a totally casual game setting, I love it. Take your time. Let's chest this shit out. But when you're playing in a tournament, that is kneecapping people who need a certain amount of time to make their fleet work. This isn't Warhammer 40,000 where you're deleting squads off the table, you know, and they're gone, and all of a sudden it's just like, well, you got turn one. Good game. It's the opposite. It turns into, okay, well, these guys are going to be shunt deployed. These guys are flank deployed. So I got to wait for them to get out before my list actually starts to take shape. You know, that means that I'm not going to play super fast. I'm going to wait till they get into position before I commit myself.
Well,
that might take 2 or 3 turns.
And by
that point, like you said, game's over. He's already got 4 or 5 points up on you in the battle log.
Yeah.
And hey, called for time. You can't finish the game.
Yes, absolutely. Because I mean, like, you know, and that has been the curse of my Terrans in tournaments. And like, I love them. I love the look of my Terrans. I love painting my Terrans. I love the way that they play. Okay. I mean, I love the idea of having these very hard to kill brick shit houses that just absorb punishment like you wouldn't believe. And just always being able to just turn back and just like basically like throw a jab in there. I'm not critting ships. I'm not getting close to double crits unless my dice are somehow ridiculously over the top. But it's just like, I'm going to shoot your dreadnought, and I'm going to do a point of damage.
Mm-hmm.
And then because your guns are at -1, when you shoot my dreadnought back, instead of getting that crit, my shields are dropping it to a point of damage. I'm going to shoot your dreadnought, do a point of damage. Now you're not doing damage to me, and that's when Terrans win games. Turn 5, turn 6 is when Terrans win games. And as a Terran player at a tournament, I just never see them. I never see those turns, and I think that's the problem. And that's why I'm considering it and looking at Adepticon going, is it even worth my time to take a fleet that I know is going to be kneecapped by custom scenarios, is going to be kneecapped, because God forbid I run into a guy who just does not move slowly. John Kingsway, I love him, but the guy is a very methodical person. You cannot rush him. He is going to make sure that he is fully aware. He's going to think about it, and then he's going to decide, I'm going to activate this squad.
Right.
And then he's going to think about his movement. He's very deliberate. And again, we're playing a fun casual game. None of these things are bad. Like, these are not even bad personality traits. But again, I get a guy like this in a custom scenario, and I am playing an Aquan fleet where every activation is, okay, launch SRS tokens, now I'm going to move, I'm going to drop my mines here, okay, measure that out, mines are here, we're going to link them, great, mines here, now I'm going to activate my SRS, we're going to do an attack run, so great, he shoots up here.
He rolls point defense, you roll this,
well, I flew past four ships, so you got to do point defense, point defense, point defense, point defense, now I'm going to roll my attack, and it's just like you get to go through all of these steps that slowdown and God Aquans with beams in every arc.
That's the thing. You're torpedoes. Firing literally every arc.
So because, like, you know, as I always said to everyone playing Aquans, I'm just like, deploy so that you're right in the middle of the board. Shoot for the very middle of his fleet so you can shoot in every direction and drop mines behind you and throw your SRS out so they can, like, if you're using the battle carrier, quick launch into their rear arc. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, that's how you play them. But it just means that, like, one ship activation on turn two is going to take you, like, 20 minutes.
Well, that's pretty exaggerated, but a long time, let's
yeah,
say.
Yeah, but, and that's exactly it. Is like, it's going to take you such a long time that you're not seeing the end of the game. And again, like, that's why I'm looking at them. Like, I love my Terrans, and I think that I could be very successful with my Terrans if I have an opportunity to finish every game, and I know I won't.
Right.
And that's the only reason I'm looking at it and saying, I should just take a different fleet to Adepticon, because at this points level, with this style of play, I can't win. I'm not going to be Dendrenzi, who end up kind of... And it's funny about Dendrenzi, because they are the sprinter of the sprinter fleets, where it's just like your first 1, 2, 3 turns is where you get all of the points, and then you just got to hold on through turns 4, 5, and 6 and ride out your victory in the hopes that you maxed your log out fast enough and he can't get those points back.
Oh, yeah. And even with clever deployment, you're going to run into that scenario. You're just not maneuverable enough to always have your primary weapon in the right arc, in the right range every single turn. One of the things that I want to talk about here, especially for people who are playing these fleets or are taking them to Adepticon or a local tournament, it's something that you do have to keep in mind. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't play them. You can still be very successful with those fleets. You just have to build to those fleets, like, early game strengths. For instance, with Rel'Thoza, you're going to want heavy cruisers. You're going to want to use your Dreadnought. You're going to want to use a lot of wings, because wings are going to be your primary source of damage in essentially turn two onward. You have mines, you have all of these things that can essentially work for you, including boarding actions. Now, that means you also have to play really, really aggressive. With Terrans, you have a couple of units that are going to be able to put out a lot of firepower early, being destroyers, your dreadnought, and even your heavy cruisers, even though they're not the best choice in a normal game, not a terrible choice for a 900 or 800 point game in a tournament where you need to throw out a lot of firepower.
Yeah, well, I was even thinking about heavy cruisers for Terrans, because knowing that the game ends turn 3, turn 4 due to time, you shunt deploy them, they get in behind, and they tear into a ship, because, again, they just throw out so many dice with their port starboard plus turret, so just, like, you rip into it, and there's not enough game for their horrifyingly bad survival statistics to end up hurting them.
And that's really the big thing there. So... the big focus that I want to have here for those types of fleets, even Aquans, right, is you have to play aggressive with fleets that don't necessarily play aggressive. That is going to be the best strategy for any player with any fleet. I could play a very slow, methodical directorate fleet, but that's not going to win me games and tournaments. I'm going to play a fleet that's rushing up the table, boarding actions, cloaked, you know, trying to do as much damage as possible while I'm getting the shit kicked out of me but at least I'm getting the points, right? If I can stay neck and neck, I know with my boarding actions, I'll be able to eventually win some games. Even your deployment is going to become very, very important because of a lot of people like to deploy in that line where it's just like, everything deploys at 12 in or 8 inches or 12 inches, whichever scenario you're playing, and yep. Everything just deploys along that line. That is the worst possible deployment you could do in a scenario or in a tournament, and everybody does it. And yep. Every time I watch people do it, it just boggles my mind that people, it's not like Warhammer where everybody thinks really hard about like, okay, this goes here and this is screaming this and this is going to go do this, because everything can be shot anywhere with no intervening fire or like reductions from intervening stuff. People kind of deploy around the scenery, but they still just deploy in a straight line. Don't do that. If you want to play really aggressive and you're trying to get points, really deploy in such a way that you are able to focus the maximum amount of your firepower at a single target until it's gone. And if you're deploying in a straight line, you are not going to be able to do that because certain stuff is going to be out of your primary range band, so much so that you're going to be like, well, I'm not going to shoot at that thing. I'm actually going to go shoot at this unit now.
Yeah.
And you're going to piecemeal your opponent, and you're just not going to get those points. The early points are going to make such a huge difference. In a lot of cases, you're going to want to charge the Admiral's vessel so that they can't play tax, so that they can't play, or so that their disorder checks are even worse. I mean, all the things that are great about killing the Admiral's vessel, you get the bonus battle log point on top of it. But if you don't deploy in such a way that you are absolutely gunning for that thing, and everything in your fleet, maybe not everything, let's say 80%, 80% of your fleet is just gunning for that ship, you are seriously hurting yourself. And you can do that with any fleet. You can do it with Terrans. You can do it with Ox.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, and I mean, the three scenarios that we played, because we were just rolling up random scenarios.
Rulebook scenarios,
which, again, nothing wrong with it. We played Ambush, we played Escalating Engagement, and then we played Capture the Waypoints. And, or Hold the Waypoint, whatever it's called. It was just one of those things where I ended, especially Escalating Engagement, it's just like, I tried to bunch up my battleship and my carrier. I got them both in on turn two, failed both command checks because two successes is just way too difficult for my Terrans. And he split them apart. So now they were a foot and a half away. And I was like, son of a bitch, because that's exactly it. When you can pack up and you can just have everything together and hunting together, it works really well. Like, for me, finally, on the last game we played, Hold the Waypoints against the Dendrenzi, it worked so well for me having my carrier right beside my battleship, because it just meant exactly what you said. Pick a unit and fucking obliterate it to the point where, you get all those points. You get full points out of it. Because, I mean, for me, what I basically ended up doing, because the Dendrenzi fleet had three squads of three cruisers, which at 900 points is fucking overkill. Holy shit, it was a lot of cruisers. But it was just like, I would activate my battleship, kind of move it forward and pound the shit out of a ship. And then, because I didn't destroy it, he wasn't really like, oh, I need to activate this squad now. Then my carrier would move up and blow up a ship, blow up the other ship, and then he'd look at it and go, well, now there's only one cruiser. I'm not going to activate it because what'll it do? Mm-hmm. And it was just like, it was such a good psychological thing for me, because then again, I'm activating my missionary frigates and it's just like, and now we're going to pound on this and now I'm going to lob torpedoes at it and I'm going to finish it off with all my activations. And you didn't activate it at all because, again, you just didn't think that that was going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's just like, now I'm out activating him. And that's a huge advantage, because I think on deployment, he had two more activations than I did, and by the bottom of turn three, I had three more than him, because I was just playing for activations.
Right.
All right, I'm going to lob torpedoes at his frigates, because Dendrenzi has shit point defense.
Right.
Look, well, it works.
And I'll throw the caveat out there. Depending on the fleet that you're playing, that's not always the soundest decision. Yes. Playing as Omnidyne, I am dependent on my combination of torps, and torps. Where I'm using my corvettes to essentially distract other units in a squadron so that their point defense can't be linked with the ship that I want to fire my dreadnought or my battleship's robot assault boarding torpedoes and standard torpedoes at. Because of this, when I was playing against the Ryushi, he deployed out there, you know, I might be able to pop a couple shots off, but as soon as we're in a turn, he's got six wings outside. Well, okay, torpedoes are completely useless now. I can't target those things. I have to use my beams when my beams are in a position to be effective. So the only real option for me was to pick apart his corvettes and utterly destroy his cruiser squadron, because there were easy points. It was a great squad for me to just take firepower off the table, and he had deployed it in such a way that he didn't have any screening wings in front of them. There was no bonus point defense for them, so I really got to use my fleet strengths. And it was one of those games where, Daryl is brand new to the fleet, so he really wasn't used to, to playing them kind of the way they should be played. But he figured it out. Start of turn three, he knew. He was like, right, I'm so far out of position. I deployed all wrong, because he deployed the straight line. He's like, I deployed all wrong. Mm-hmm. And he knew. He was like, it's over, so everything's shunting this turn. And then it became the race where I had to try to get enough points before he would leave so that I could actually get enough of a battle log to get a landslide. I knew it was a win. He knew it was a win. It was about mitigating that loss now.
Yeah.
When I was playing against the Cerulean's, we were doing escalating engagement. So tier one's not even on the table. So my focus had to be taking down his tier three, nerfing them as much as possible. And then when I eventually got my tier one on the table, absolutely going after his gunships, because those were the things that are going to do the most damage to me. And if I don't take them out, I'm screwed. And I knew I was going to be able to deal with his battleship late game. Like, it was a guarantee. He wasn't going to kill my...
Well, yeah, I mean, a single battleship with a shield is not anything that is hard to kill.
No, he upgraded his shield on it, but still.
Ooh, two shields.
I think he had extra points, so he bought, like, all the upgrades for it. It's like 220-point battleship. I was like... But,
well, you might as well. 375 on 15 frigates with pack hunters, 300 on his gunships, so that's 675. Take a battleship that's 180 base, that's not enough points for anything else.
When I played the Terrans, we were playing the ambush, that was my only target for the first few turns, was his battleship. Boom. Once I blew it off the table, his fleet crumbled. He just didn't have the firepower to deal with me. He was too far out of position. The most he could do to me was take out my two gunships that I put right in front of him, essentially as bait. And then once he had done a little bit of damage on him, I started the bug out. So he then kind of had to focus them for a whole turn, which gave me more than enough time to actually finish. But of course, Terrans being Terrans, it took a turn longer than it should have. And I was like, oh, god damn it. But yeah, you have to be able to essentially pick at not the weak points necessarily, because nothing's really going to be a weak point. You have to be able to pick at the places that are going to get you the most points.
Mm-hmm.
That you know you can garner quick early points, whether that's just wiping out tier three or taking out a cruiser squadron, do it, right? If you can get those points quickly, absolutely do it. If you put the battleship on the table and you can fire at it from turn one, take it off as quickly as possible, because those are the quickest, best points that's going to hurt him the most.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point for tournaments in particular, because again, like, if I know that we're playing the long game, I can do certain things like, and this is something that I do when we play, when Maddie and I play at your house, because I know we've got the 4 hours it'll take for our 1,200 point game, but it's just like, I ignore his dreadnought, I don't even shoot at it until I've literally wiped every last thing off the board, and then it's just like, and now... My entire focus is that. Every last gun that I have left, everything, all the time is going to do it. But you just can't adopt strategies like that in tournaments. You can't adopt a late game strategy because, you know, okay, realistically look at it. A tier 3 squadron is worth a 3-point battle log swing. So 3 points, that's still a draw. Another 3 points, great, I'm in minor win territory. Unless he happened to take a cruiser squad down to half, in which case it's a draw again. So it's just like the way that you play for a 6-turn game has to be different than how you play in a 3-turn game, because that's all you're getting in tournaments.
Right.
Realistically, you can bank on 3 turns. If it's a very one-sided game, you will play it to conclusion. But if it is a very even game that's going neck and neck, you're gonna get 3 for sure. Maybe a 4th turn. You will never see turn 5.
Yep.
Again, trust me on experience for this. So, but it's just like that's the thing. So it's just like you have to go for those big points and those easy points. Like cruisers, you have to go for cruisers because those are going to basically give you a 6-point swing. 7 if they have 6 hull points, but those are kind of rare. Those are what Directorate and Ralthosa heavy cruisers.
Because
they have 6 hull points, right? But it's just like so you're gonna get 6 and 7 point swings out of cruiser squads. They have to be your number one priority, but you still can't forget about what's winning him games, and that goes down to that Nuka battleship,
right?
You know,
one of the last things I want to talk about here before we kind of conclude. Is shunting and reserves. Nobody uses them for some weird godforsaken reason. In the games that we played, only you, me, and Scotty actually did any sort of reserves. Please, for God's sakes, if you have something in your fleet that you know is just going to get blown up in the first 2 turns before it can get into range, shunt it in. Or if you're scared of shunting, flank deploy it.
Okay, but you should never be scared of shunting.
No, don't ever be scared of shunting.
If you look at the shunt entry table, there is no bad result. There is nothing.
You have to roll double
there.
Ones or double sixes. The only time anything bad, like actually bad, happens.
Yeah, actually bad. And like double ones, double sixes is like a 1 in 18 chance of you rolling it. I mean, Scotty with his Ceruleans, when we're playing 1,200 points, takes 2 battleships, 1 with his Fleet Admiral on it. He always shunt enters them, always. I don't think he's ever had the double one or double sixes. So
I've
it's just
never
like,
had a double one or double six.
And neither have I. Like, do not be afraid of that table because the odd, like, can you have something mildly inconvenient happen? Sure.
Yeah, everybody arrives full stop. Everybody arrives with a hazard marker. Oh, no. Dear God.
Yeah, mildly inconvenient.
Right.
Not bad.
So, if you have those things, please use those reserve deployments. I know for a lot of people, they're just not used to it, and they feel like, oh, but I need it on the table, or it's just going to go bad for me. It typically won't. We talk about shooting at targets of priority, targets of opportunity, but what goes hand in hand with that is forcing your opponent to shoot at the things you want him to shoot at. Mm-hmm. If I put my gunships in flank deploy so that they come out turn 2, turn 3 in the right position for me. I'm forcing you to shoot at my elusive corvettes or my tier 1s, which are ready to soak up that damage and happy to do so. If you are playing with, I guess, any sized game, you also have to know when to shunt out. Like, when to just get the hell out.
Well, and that was the point that I was going to talk about.
Yeah, I want to give an example. When I played in an 800-point event, which was Onslaught last year, I was playing my Terrakians, and I had just been crushing everybody I went up against. It was a fun list. Gravity weapons are cheating. It's fantastic. Basically, I had played against good old John Kingsman, my buddy, and we'd played 100 times before, and I was so headstrong, I wanted to push his destroyers off the table because they were deployed on the edge of the table full stop. And I was like, if I can just get up there. Oh, man, if I can just get up there, I can do it. And in doing so, I completely screwed myself. I put all of my stuff in the worst possible position, and he was just ready to utterly pounce on me and destroy me.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I realized it, I was like, my whole army shunts. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I'm going to lose this game, but if I shunt out everything now, I'll get a draw.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. People don't like that. And sometimes it is a bit of a, I think it was one of our weekly listener poll questions at the time where it was like, is this a valid strategy or is this just kind of a dick move?
Well, yeah, that was way, way back when you were doing the tournament in Imaginary Wars, because it was just like, it was the old scenario where it's just like, I have to capture your admiral's vessel in a boarding action. And you just shunted at turn 1 and you're like, see ya, bitch.
Yeah. Well, and the guy who would have won the tournament could not win because literally there was no way for him to get the landslide.
Yeah.
So basically, or at the time would have been a massacre, whatever it was called. Crushing victory. You can't wait until you have 2 hull points left.
No.
And in most cases, when we're talking about tier 1s, as soon as they're at half and you've given up 2 points, begin shunting them out.
Yeah.
Just don't, you do not ever, ever, ever want to give him those points. Now, again, crazy shit can happen. You can go from 8 hull points to 2, and you're like, well, there's no point in shunting out because he's going to blow up.
2 games in a row, baby.
Right. It'll happen. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, if he crits you and then does 2 points of damage, you're at half. Just begin shunting. You are forcing him to shoot at it, mm-hmm. so you know for a fact he has to shoot at it, which in a lot of cases, if you're playing the right attack cards, you can power the shields on that thing, or depending on the table that you have set up, you can just gun him forward into an asteroid belt, full stop. That way he's at half firepower shooting at it. I've done that so many times, it works so well.
Well, yeah, because who gives a shit about taking asteroid damage That's when right. you're shunting off anyway?
Exactly, and in most cases, asteroid damage won't hurt a tier 1 anyways.
No, it really won't.
D6, 4, whatever. So, especially when we're talking about dreadnoughts or we're talking about your admiral's vessel, do not ever give those points up. The odd chance that you might do a couple more hull points on him with your nerfed weapon is absolutely not worth the point swing that giving up that ship will throw to your opponent.
Yeah.
Get them the hell off the table. Hide them behind a planet. Get them in an asteroid belt. Get them in a debris field, a nebula, whatever the hell you need to do. And then use what's left in your fleet to try to get as many points as you can. Because what did we say in our games that both of our fleets max would give up 12?
Yeah.
12 points.
Yeah, if I lost absolutely everything, I could not bottom out.
Right. So if I shunt out my dreadnought, the max I will give up is 7 points. Because the Admiral plus the 5 hull points, so it's actually less than that, it would be 6.
Well, no, yeah, I was going to say, my 12 was what I would minus. So it's just like, it would be 8 is the most points that I would ever go backwards.
Oh, yeah.
Going up, I mean, it caps, who cares? I mean, right. If you're capped at 15, all I need to do now is start gaining points because... Right.
But if I can only exactly, but if I can only ever go minus 6, or minus whatever it ends up being, minus 8, depending on the scenario, that's never going to be enough to give them a landslide. They're just not going to be able to do it. So you're denying so much points to your opponent by just conceding that shit. You don't have to concede the game. Keep on fighting. You've got other shit on the table. But don't have this, you know, corn mentality in John Kingsway's mind, because he says he'll never, ever shunt escape. He just refuses. So he'll literally be like, listen, dude, if you just shunt out that dreadnought right now, like, it's just a minor loss. He's like, I don't care, and then it's a landslide.
Yeah.
You have to keep those things in mind when you're...
And I think, you're absolutely right. You need to be able to use tactical shunt escape in order to mitigate the damage that's happening. And again, I think that's some of the brilliance of... Firestorm Armada, because like we always say in Small World, when you choose to go into decline with a race, will always feel like the worst decision in the world. Shunt Escape is no different.
Right.
You know, because basically with a tier 1, Lang is absolutely right. If it gets down to half and you give the plus 2 points, immediately get it off the table. Because, you know, with Power to Shields, if you have, if you're Ralthosa and you have Cloak or some Directorate with Cloak, you're just going to Cloak that shit. And you're going to rip it off the board so that you're not giving up those points. Because, again, even if we look at a battleship, so my Terran battleship, when it died, it took me from the landslide victory because I was capped on my battle log. So I went from 15 down to 11, and he went from 2 up to 7.
Mm-hmm.
All because that one corrosive marker. You're like,
right.
God damn it.
well, and I had games where when I would pull out my dreadnought, I would never go far away from an asteroid belt. Like, I would always just kind of circle it. Like, yeah, I'd try to line up my weapons. I'd try to do what I need to do. And I've done this with my Omnidyne, actually, with my Omnidyne battleship. Not the Dread, because I don't really ever worry about it dying. But with my Omnidyne battleship, a lot of times what I'll do is I'll put it right in front of an asteroid belt so that I know if things go sour by this turn, I can just fly it directly into the asteroid belt, full stop, begin the shunt.
Yep.
Hey, it's Cloak now. Good luck. Have fun. And that will typically work very, very well. Yes, you are giving up fields of fire, your shots are going to be reduced, so on and so forth, but a lot of times it's safe, especially if you know the opponent you're playing against is gunning for you early.
Mm-hmm.
Right, if it's Dindrenzi, you also want to screen them more than they want you to screen
your
shots, right?
Oh,
so keep those things in mind while you're playing. All right, so...
And one other word on tier two squadrons. Tier two are always the hardest because they're easy enough to focus and kill and get those points. So you really have to start shunting your tier two before they're worthless. And I know it hurts. It hurts so bad to look at it and be like, I got a squad of three cruisers. They all have four hull points each. One of them has taken a crit and his arc is impeded. Shunt them.
See, because, that's crazy talk.
Oh, God, no. Are you kidding
me? You play Terrans, man. No, I
play Terrans, and I probably have the easiest to kill tier 2 in the entire fucking
game. Oh, dude, I get it.
Which is hilarious because we have the hardest to kill tier 1 and 3.
It's one of those things where I typically will kind of shunt them as a last resort, only to draw fire, to continue to draw fire.
Yeah.
What you'll see a lot of people do is they'll knock off two cruisers in a three-man squad, and they'll just ignore that last cruiser because they know they can mop him up later. A lot of times what I'll do is I'll kind of keep them in the fight, even if I have two cruisers left. If I have two cruisers left and one is damaged, yeah, absolutely shunt them out. But two full-strength cruisers, I feel, is still worth having on the
team. Oh, fuck no.
Fair enough. Okay, but yeah, that's where you and I differ, right?
Well, but again, like, I have the easiest to kill tier two in the game.
Right.
And I think that's the big difference, because, I mean, like, there have been games, and this was a game with Matty. He shunt deployed his three heavy cruisers with his Rothosa, and he was able to get them behind three of my full-stopped Terran cruisers that I was launching nuclear torpedoes with. And before he even activated, because I was trying to pull an activation out of him, I activated them and shunted. Had not taken a point of damage yet. Activated my full space drive. He still blew them all three of them up, and I never even got them off the board. Like, that's the thing that Terran Tier 2 do. Because, like, for me, with Tier 2, when you look at it, you're like, okay, they're in a bad spot. I've taken a little bit of damage. You know, do not fall into the trap of, I'm going to shoot this turn and shunt them next, because they will not make it. So it's just like, and I think that's the turn, is like, when you're looking at it, you're like, I know I have to shunt them, and I can wait a turn. You cannot wait that turn unless you have the bug out card.
Right.
Shunt them now. Like, you know, and it sucks, because you know that they have enough guns and firepower output that they can still do what you need them to do. But for me, I would rather shunt a full strength, well, not even like full strength, because obviously they've taken damage. I would rather start shunting a three-man squad that's taken a crit on one ship and give up 0 points than risk giving up the 6-point swing. And, like, that's the thing where it's just like, because, like,
well, that's why I deploy Terran cruisers full stop on the edge of the board.
Which I have done, and they have still given up points.
I know your experience with it has been a lot different from my experience with it. But, yes. Maybe I think it's viable, and I think people definitely need to think about it and really actually put the thought into, like, okay, when is it just time to admit defeat, and when do I start mitigating my loss? Players don't do that, and it really hurts them. And for a lot of players, it's too late. In a lot of cases, even when you first deploy and you can see what their deployment is, you know, like, all right, I've got this in the bag, or you know, like, okay, I'm screwed. I really need to start maneuvering. A lot of players don't do that because, again, they deploy in a straight line across the edge of the deployment zone. Everything flies straight forward. Mm-hmm. And that's how they play the game. And they'll face off one squad against one squad. And it just makes absolutely no sense.
And that's exactly it. Is like the last 1,200 point game we played, I remember I was playing a really new player. He was playing RSN. And at deployment, I knew I had him. I'm like, there is no way that I can lose this game, and then the game is called for time, and it was a draw. And you're like, are you fucking kidding me? I have a dreadnought behind his dreadnought shooting it in the rear. I've got battlecruisers shooting nuclear torps behind in the rear of his cruisers. And you're like, oh, my God, why can I not get more turns? Why?
So there it is. So we got the weekly listener poll question for you guys. This isn't related specifically to Firestorm. This kind of applies all over the place. Do you feel that a defensive strategy can work in a tournament, with regards to pretty much any tabletop war game, Warhammer 40,000, Firestorm Armada, pick one, go for it. Yes or no. You can find that at jadedgamercast.com. And that has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.